from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Fact is, I love baseball. Played it in Little League and barnyards and at too many picnics to count. It's great fun. But in the stadium, on the screen, in our heart of hearts, does baseball still slide easily into America's changing culture? My guest today, Jonathan Mahler, says no, it just doesn't. It's too slow, too old-fashioned, out of sync. What do you think? This hour On Point, is baseball running out of innings, out of steam? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you left the bleachers? Are your kids, grandkids signing up for baseball? Is it still America's pastime? Will baseball thrive in this slam-bam century? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Jonathan Mahler, sports columnist for Bloomberg View and Deadspin, contributing writer for the New York Times. He wrote a big book about baseball called Ladies and Gentlemen, The Bronx is Burning. And in last Sunday's Times, he wrote a lament for baseball headlined, Is the Game Over? You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Jonathan Mahler, welcome to On Point. Thanks a lot for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
This is not dancing on the grave. It's not even a grave. I mean, you start out saying Major League Baseball is doing just fine, thank you.
Yes, there's a paradox here. And the paradox, and I would also say, like you, I love baseball and played it my whole life as well. Still occasionally try to play.
Good for you.
But the paradox is that baseball is actually financially healthier than ever. I mean, it's booming as a business. It's doing very, very well economically. And yet, I feel that culturally, it does not have the same relevance, the same sort of front and centerness in American culture that it once did. And I think, you know, that's a function of a lot of factors. One you've already mentioned, which is the pace of life, or as Dan Okrent calls it, the acoustic argument, that we live in a much louder, a noisier, faster culture now, and the pace of baseball is quiet and slow, and in that sense, it's a little bit out of sync with the cultural moment.
I mean, let's test some of this. I mean, we've got a lot of strong baseball centers around this country. I'm sitting in one. You're sitting in one. There are a lot more where the bleachers are full. So can you be, declining in relevance and filling the bleachers at the same time?
Well, yes, because I think that really, you know, in a sense, I think that baseball as a, I mean, and I should say that, you know, there are certainly exceptions, and as you point out, the two of us are sitting respectively in two baseball centers, Boston and New York. When they appear in the postseason, it's a godsend for Major League Baseball, either of those teams. They do enormously well. They have big national audiences. Having said that, I feel that baseball can succeed because, and is succeeding because, in these various local markets, there are local teams that have huge local contracts. They fill their stadiums and they do very well, but they don't transcend that local audience. When one of those teams is in the postseason, people don't watch, and that's what we've seen over the course of the past decade or so. In postseason attendance, postseason TV ratings are really down, and I think that's a function of the fact that baseball is in a sense, with the exception of these big national brands like the Red Sox, like the Yankees, that baseball is a local sport, whereas football, I think, is more of a national sport. People will just tune in and watch anybody play.
I mean, it is a paradox. Tell it to the people who love their Cubs or love their Cards or love their Dodgers. On the other hand, it does. There's a certain sense. I'm looking at the cover of Sports Illustrated here. It's the baseball playoff preview. And it's all about baseball, but for the first time in the history of the magazine, they added a swimsuit model to the regular Sports Illustrated cover. This is Kate Upton sitting on the shoulders of Atlanta Braves brothers BJ and Justin Upton. So there's a funny name thing going on. But when it takes a swimsuit model to sell the playoffs, maybe you're on to something here, John DeMaio.
I like that that anecdotal evidence. I mean, because really it is, I mean, what we're talking about, aside from these national TV ratings, it is, as I say in the essay, it's unscientific. This is my own cultural observation. I think a lot of people, I think, do agree with me. I'm sure there are those who don't. But
I mean, you say they've done so many things right. You say they've got more exciting stars than you can ever remember. They've achieved that elusive competitive balance, seven different champions over the last decade. So it's not just Yankees anymore, anybody in particular dominating a lot of brand new ballparks. And Major League Baseball profits in the last 20 years growing from $1 billion annually to nearly $8 billion. That's a lot of positive indication. Are there hard numbers you look at on the downside, or is it just a feeling, Jonathan?
Well, I think that I think the most compelling hard numbers are those postseason TV ratings, because I feel that, you know, that's when you get to see whether baseball is working as a national sport, as a non-local sport, and you can compare those against the NBA's postseason ratings and against, I mean, the NFL's postseason ratings, though I would caution anyone against comparing anything to the NFL postseason or regular season ratings, because it is just such a TV juggernaut, which I think is, again, a point I make in the piece is that, you know, that you can be a casual football fan. Football is a sport that you know, that you watch people, it's an enormously complicated sport, football. And I think a lot of people have really, you know, myself among them, have no idea what's going on at a really kind of granular level, in terms of play calling and these thick textbooks filled with plays.
But it's still fun to watch.
But it's a whole lot of fun to watch, because you have a guy throwing the ball, you have a guy catching the ball, you have a guy tackling him, running up the field. It's a sport that was basically made for television, or it feels like it. It wasn't made for television. And so I feel that you know, whereas baseball, I think it's harder to be a casual baseball fan, to just turn on a baseball game and get swept up in it. I think that you need to – baseball's a game for obsessives. And I happen to be one of those obsessives, and it sounds like you might be also. But I think in some ways that is a part of the glory of baseball. But I feel that it also is something that might be contributing to its cultural, I feel that it's a bit hyperbolic, but I'll say it anyway, cultural irrelevance.
I mean, cultural irrelevance. I cannot claim to be an obsessive. I just enjoy it. I always enjoyed playing it, and you know, when it's on in the background, it's just kind of a comforting feeling. I mean, lots of us have associations with baseball. I remember, you know, a million years ago, mm-hmm. my granddad listening to Harry Carey call the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, on a summer night when everyone is settling down to sleep, just that coming through over the crickets. Those are great memories,
yes,
and associations.
I agree, and I think, though I think in that observation, I think you've both touched on part of the appeal of baseball, the nostalgic appeal of baseball, and also a potential, you know, again, I hesitate to call it a weakness, but the flip side of that is that baseball's appeal is tied to the past. Does that work in our cultural moment?
Yeah, maybe not, but there's a lot of things from the past that people are enjoying. You know, people like Handmade this and that again. You say it's not nationally robust enough, but then there's this whole urge to localism these days. So what if it's just local? I'm not sure. On the other hand, if you want to be very current, you say don't even compare it to the NFL, but why not? I mean, if we're talking about its cultural relevance,
it
was the American sport. And if it now can't even be compared to the NFL in terms of, I don't know, money, viewership,
in terms of viewership, you can't even begin to – it's apples and oranges. And I think that's right. I mean, you know, in the 1940s, baseball's only competition was boxing. And it really was television that made football so popular, and college football so popular as well. It was really purely a function of the rise of TV. And I do think that that's part of this also, is just the fact that – you know, we now have, because of ESPN and all of ESPN's competitors or imitators, and the internet and the 24-hour news sports cycle, we just are inundated with sports, and there are so many other options. And I think that's part of it too. I mean, in during baseball's golden age, as as we're wont to call it, the 50s, the 60s, baseball was king, and there was not a whole lot of competition. There was no cable television, there was no ESPN serving up all sorts of alternatives, and
not to mention email and tweets and SMS messages and everything else that we're inundated with these days.
So part of it, is just competition, and I do think that you know, and again, I wouldn't say that this is necessarily I'm not making a value judgment on this, but you have to say that the NBA has done a very good job at building its brand in recent years, really since the rise of Michael Jordan.
And MLB, maybe not as much. We'll come back and test that and a whole lot more. Mark Twain called baseball a symbol of the drive and push and rush and struggle of the raging, tearing, booming 19th century. Jonathan Mahler writes, 20th century, 21st century, not so much, just out of tempo. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From coast to coast, that's all you'll hear of Joe, the one-man show. He's glorified the horse-hide sphere, joked in Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio, we want you on our side.
He'll live in baseball's Hall of Fame, he got there blow by blow. Our kids will tell their kids his name, joked in Joe DiMaggio.
We dream of Joey with the light from back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Major League Baseball, baseball in general, and whether it's got the speed, the action, the drama, the mojo to win our national loyalty in the 21st century. Jonathan Mahler is with us, contributing writer for the New York Times, Bloomberg View, Deadspin. But I had an essay in the Times last Sunday headlined, "Is the Game Over?" You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Saying, you know, maybe it's just out of step with our culture these days. Gee, we don't know. But maybe it's just not in the tempo of 21st century American life. Here's a little sound from that golden age. This was September 29th, 1955. First game of the World Series between the New York Giants and the Cleveland Indians. The Giants' Willie Mays made a 420-foot catch to deny the Indians a three-point home run.
There's a long.
It's that way back excitement, and it's pretty cool in a moment like that. But there are plenty of others that hardly sound 21st century, those sort of draggy moments, a burst of excitement of a great play or grand slam. That's awesome. But here's what it sounded like this past June in the game between the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Angels.
So this would be his second start as he's in the middle of a 30-day rehab assignment. And at the end of the 30 days, you either have to bring him up or assign him to a minor league team. Coming back from right shoulder surgery. Chopped to third. Kicks foul.
And on it goes. And it can get slower than that, as you know. Jonathan Mahler, lots of fun feedback on social media here. Polly writes in from Charleston, South Carolina. Says, here in Charleston, baseball is about as culturally relevant as polka music. Okay, so that's got a different time kind of feeling to it. Mark writes to us on Facebook, says, it isn't violent enough to be our national game. This country loves violence. Mark says, I love baseball, but this country loves to see people hit each other. Football is our country's game. I can't watch it without cringing, but he says that's the way it is. But George says, look, baseball still has all it needs to remain America's game. It doesn't need the clowns who are fans for so-called 21st century super games. There's the appeal of the purist, Jonathan, who says this is what a great game should be. Don't be distracted by all the hurly-burly crunch and, you know, boom.
I mean, I'm good with that. I feel like I'm still a baseball fan and as strong a baseball fan as ever, but I feel, you know, in a sense maybe partly this is about baseball redefining its mission, recognizing that it's not necessarily a sport that is going to appeal to everyone, but that it has certainly has a strong enough following to remain more than economically viable, to be robust and to be really sort of powerful as a as an economic force, and to make a lot of people a lot of money, and to make a lot of fans happy.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't matter if it's the national pastime. Maybe it's the national refuge now. Maybe that's okay.
I think that's a good point. I do think the pace issue is an interesting one, because you know, in fact, that into the 1910s, it was possible to play a game in under an hour. I mean, it didn't happen every day, but games were much, much faster. Mm-hmm. And I don't, again, as a baseball fan, I don't mind the pace of baseball games. I'm okay. I enjoy sitting there. I enjoy going to a game, actually having a conversation with a friend over the course of the game. Gradually, as the game heats up, hopefully, you get more and more caught up in the game. And in some ways, the long pauses can help build drama. But you know, is that going to appeal to kids today, to the video game generation, to the ESPN generation, to people who are people who could instead choose to watch people crash into each other in pads
or in great big cars for that matter,
or exactly
on racetracks. Last eight years, it produced the 7 least watched World Series on record, as Jonathan Mahler points out. So it's not just a feeling about all this. And yet, Jonathan Mahler's standby. Kathleen's calling from Jamestown, New York. Kathleen, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Baseball is life. Our bucket list is to hit every stadium in the United States at some point in time.
How are you doing on that?
As of, if we get the game on October 9th in Atlanta, we will be seeing my husband's hometown, Dodgers,
great,
play. And then we have tickets for the 19th of October in St. Louis, watching my hometown Cardinals play. And yes, I do remember Eric Carey.
Yeah.
And that will be 5 stadiums for this year.
Nice.
Our heartbreak comes with the thought that Candlestick will be down before we can get to San Francisco.
So, Kathleen, we get it. You're a stone cold fan. You're working your bucket list down. But what about Jonathan's point? You love it. Your husband loves it. You're in those. But does it speak to this century when everything is so juiced up and amped up and fast?
I think it speaks to this century if we as parents teach our children about it. I actually live in the Goodlettsville area where the team went last year for the youth championship, and I was amazed at how many people throughout the country were watching baseball on little kids. And also how many of my friends watch the Little League World Series as well as other teams, whatever baseball is on.
Kathleen, it sounds like you're going to be in the ballpark no matter what, and we hear you're enjoying it. And, you know, bravo to you. But we're testing here. Let us stick with that image of you and your husband knocking down your bucket list. And take it for a minute, if I may, to New York City and Matthew Futterman, sports editor for the Wall Street Journal. Matthew, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hey, you wrote, this is a couple of years ago now, but your headline was, "Has baseball's moment passed?" Maybe this is a perennial, I don't know. But you were looking at this issue of kids that is raised right there by Kathleen. And she said kids are into it. You said, well, not so fast. The numbers don't look so great for kids coming into baseball. What did you see, Matthew?
Well, what you find is that if you play a lot, then you play a lot. That sounds silly, but let me explain that. The numbers are going up for kids who play more than 50 times a year, but the numbers are going down for the overall participation. In the mid-1990s, you had about 2.5 million kids playing Little League baseball. That represents about 3/4 of the youth baseball in the U.S. And then 15 years later, you had about 2 million kids playing. So that's a pretty steep drop. And baseball understands that those kids who play and grow up playing, you know, that's their future fan base right there.
Sure.
So if those numbers are going down, then what's going to go down the line are the attendance numbers and the TV numbers.
What did you analyze, or did you talk to people analyzing why kids aren't turning out in the same numbers for Little League?
Well, I mean, one sense it's a cultural thing. I mean, kids play fewer sports now these days. You don't have three-sport athletes for the most part in high school. A lot of kids have
to specialize.
Choosing to specialize in one sport. At the same time, parents are very focused on their kids getting exercise, and parents drop their kids off at the baseball field and sometimes watch them stand around for an hour, not moving their bodies very much. I would say that in terms of the sort of ethos of trying to get your kid exercise, sports like soccer and lacrosse and basketball are a lot more friendly to the sort of zeitgeist right now in terms of that.
Let me get a call right here from Dothan, Alabama. Johnny's calling. Johnny, hi, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom, and thanks for this very touching topic. I'm a baseball fan. I played baseball from Little League all the way to college, and I like to touch on some things. When we talk about baseball, especially in the Deep South where I'm from, baseball has become almost the new golf, if you will. The cost is just there, because when you talk about equipment, a baseball bat's average from $300 and up.
Is that right now? I guess I haven't bought a baseball bat in a while. Wow.
Yeah, and that baseball bat, sometimes it dies on you within the middle of the season, so the parent got to buy another.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also in the Deep South, we have what we call a travel ball. And travel ball is very expensive. It's even expensive for the parents, because the parents have to go from city to city with the child and support the school, the team. And this is an ongoing thing from Little League baseball all the way to the high school level. And when they play high school ball, they are required to play AAU ball. So that goes into the summer. So you're back playing what we call travel ball, so the expense is there. Then you have to look at what we call urban planning. I call it a blackout. In a lot of sectors, there's no baseball fields because certain cities do not allocate money for baseball facilities.
Why do you call it a blackout, Johnny? A blackout. Why?
The reason why I call it a blackout, as you even when you look at Major League Baseball and even on a collegiate level, you'll see less and less African Americans playing baseball. And that reason is because the facilities is not there. And then it's a game that has to be taught from a dad or a granddad or uncle. Then, unfortunately, you got the breakdown of the family. So if the dad or the uncle or the grandpa is not there to teach baseball, that child is not going to be introduced to the game. So they're not going to know too much about that game. They're going to know about the football, and they're going to know about other things.
Hey Johnny, you are great. You could be a professional analyst here. But if you stick by for a second, let me bring one more in, if I may. Jonathan Mahler, Matthew Futterman, stand by. David Steele joins us right now. Wonderful columnist for SportingNews.com. He's in Laurel, Maryland today. David Steele, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me, and thanks for leading me in with that previous call. It's as if you set it up for me.
Well, I mean, Johnny is still with us from Alabama, but he's talking about a blackout where there's just not the facilities and maybe even the knowing players in a young black child's life, for one, to get them on this path. What about it, David?
Yeah, I think it's symptomatic all the way across American culture. I think that this is something that's going on with every group in this country, but I think it's particularly exacerbated among black communities. I've lived here in the D.C. area and in Baltimore and in Oakland and in New York. And it's kind of the same situation everywhere you go. There's no place to play. The fields aren't really maintained. And as Johnny mentioned, it's expensive to play. And so much of the sport at the youth level is taken over by travel teams, which makes it prohibitive for young players to join up. And it seems like sort of something that feeds on itself, because the fewer people that see black players in the major leagues, in the minors, in colleges, or even at things like the College World Series or even the Little League World Series, they lose interest. They don't attend the games as much. They don't watch the games as much on TV. They don't play as much. And then that's another generation that chooses not to play. And the number of players at all those levels, especially in the major leagues, goes down. Again, it's just gone down and down and down over the last, decade and a half, to it's almost not quite at the level before Jackie Robinson came in, but it's pretty close now.
The thing is, David, and Johnny, too, in Alabama, I mean, you watch baseball, there's so many Caribbean players, great ones out there, that it's not as though you don't see people of color on the diamond, David.
It's different the way that they that the players are raised and sort of acculturated into the sport overseas and in the Latin countries and the way they are in the United States. And certainly baseball treats both groups a lot differently because you look at the amount of money and expense and time spent to build academies and to scout there, to sign up players in mass, and they're able to sign them incredibly cheaply for their very first contract, and they can sign them as young as 16 years old in a lot of these countries, and just because of the economic deprivation that players from those countries are usually going through, you have no shortage of people, of young players, who are going to come into the sport and through the pipeline and into the major leagues from those areas. And baseball is really kind of doing the opposite with African Americans in this country, and in a bigger sense, with all the groups, with all the kids in the United States. It's just too difficult to play the sport if you're inclined to play it, if you're young and African American in this country, because there are, you know, little leagues are drying up. They're constantly begging for money. Youth leagues, you know, the AAU in basketball is much more supportive of that sport than it is in baseball. High school teams are dropped because of financial reasons and budgetary reasons, and they have these expensive travel.
Actually, David,
teams.
I think the high school the number of baseball programs at the high school level is actually that's held steady. For a while now.
Yeah. Hey, let me
in terms
take
of the High School Athletic Association numbers.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
There's something about, I think there was 15,000 or something, a little more than 15,000, and that's been a pretty stable number.
Hey, Johnny in Alabama, what do you tell a great young African American athlete these days, Johnny, who's thinking, well, what should I do? Baseball, basketball, football. What's your advice these days, Johnny?
Well, the unfortunate thing is, we have to look at money. And, you know, the financial aspect of it, even from the local city municipalities, that they have to make sure that the facilities are there. So it's hard to introduce a game where there's no facilities. Then you have to look at the major part of this is the financial part, even on a Little League level. And I know this for a fact as a Little League coach, and I help coach my son, you're going to spend on average about $1,200 a year to have that child play baseball.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it goes up when the child gets in high school. When you get in high school, you got to make sure your child, because the school, they don't furnish baseball bats for the player.
Wow.
So you got to make sure you at least get that player two bats that's certified by the high school and collegiate level. And those bats, like I said, they are very expensive. They cost between $300 and up, some $600. And if you got a good slugger, that baseball bat is going to die probably within a month or two. So you're back at square one. You got to buy another bat.
Johnny, you know your stuff inside and out. I mean, it makes me think about the whole kind of social infrastructure that goes into supporting baseball. Maybe it's just not there these days. Johnny in Dothan, Alabama, thank you for your call. David Steele with SportingNews.com. Always great to hear from you, David. Thanks very much for spending a minute with us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
And Matthew Futterman, sports editor for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for your insights, Matthew.
Thanks a lot.
Jonathan Mahler, stand by. We're looking at baseball and how it does in this century. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with Here Come the Yankees. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Major League Baseball, baseball in general, and whether it's got the speed, the action, the drama, the mojo to win our ongoing loyalty in the 21st century. Jonathan Mahler is with us from New York, contributing writer, columnist for Bloomberg View and Deadspin for the New York Times. Had a column, an essay about a week ago asking, is the game over? Some agree, some don't, but he put the question out there and makes it, he said, look, he loves baseball, but is it going to have the right kind of feel, the right kind of a cultural sink for this century. There was a time, a long time, when it was right in the middle of the culture, references to it all over the place. Here's 1986, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, a scene they go to a Cubs game, and they're indulging in the great American pastime of catching a foul ball and taunting the batter.
I think I broke my thumb.
Hey, bada, 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 so win, bada. Come on. Hey, bada, 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 so win, bada. Kennedy, 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 so win, bada.
Okay, 1986, 1991, City Slickers. They're out on the cattle run. They meet a vacationer named Bonnie. She explains to Phil, played by Daniel Stern, the difference between enjoying the game and men's obsession with the game of baseball.
So do you hate baseball?
No, I like baseball. I just never understood how you guys can spend so much time discussing it. I mean, I've been to games, but I don't memorize who played third base for Pittsburgh in 1960.
Don Hoke.
Don Hoke.
Beat you.
See, that's exactly what I mean.
Are you going to find it in the middle of a big movie these days? I don't know. We're looking at it. Join us. 800-423-8255. Jonathan, some response from online. I mean, there's a lot. But here, Toyota says, the season is too long. The game is too long. Chris says, baseball is still the national pastime. It's how we pass the time between football seasons. Oh, that sounds like a well-used joke. But Ray says, baseball is still the best, but it is slow. It's a deliberate game in an era of many distractions and the desire for constant action. But there's something that can be so satisfying about a 17-pitch at-bat, no matter what the outcome is.
I think that's right, and I think you know that first caller who was with her bucket list of stadiums, I think speaks so directly to this question, this issue of you know, is baseball a game for obsessives, and does it require an obsessive to? I love a 17-pitch at bat too, but does it require a kind of obsessiveness or a true fan, not a casual fan, to enjoy watching a single at bat that goes on for 17 pitches, that to watch 10 pitches fouled off? I mean, does everyone see the drama in that and the kind of cat and mouse game going on between pitcher and catcher, or is that something that that will only appeal to a real baseball fan, which is I think a niche?
Well, all you need is enough of them, and there have been a lot. Jess in Norfolk, yes. Virginia. Jess, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
For me, the season is just way too long. Baseball season, actually, it goes spring, summer, and fall. It's like a three-season event. Do we really need 160-plus games to determine who will be in the playoffs and all of that? It also bleeds into football season. And, I think that any of these sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, hockey, where you have over 100 games, that does take away from it in these modern times. NFL football, 17 games, and the players want to keep it at no more than 17 for regular season.
It makes the stakes higher, certainly. Yeah. I mean, you look at football, every single game matters. Even basketball, which has a lot more games than football but fewer than baseball, the games matter. And I do think that the point of the baseball postseason, baseball kind of bleeding into October, if baseball cared about its national TV ratings, and I'm not sure that it does or that it needs to, because as we've discussed, financially it doesn't necessarily matter. But if it did, it would not choose to go up against football and up against the new TV shows, which are also starting during the baseball postseason.
I mean, 160 games is a lot, but then if you love it, maybe it's the more the merrier. Jess, thanks for your call. Ariadne in Nashville, Tennessee. Ariadne, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, my grandmother worked for the New York Yankees, but I worked at an elementary school for 5 years in St. Louis, Missouri, which is really a baseball town. We've heard from St. Louis already on the program, but my kids at the elementary school loved baseball. They knew all the stats. They knew all the players. They could tell me all the history of the game. So I think baseball is not dead.
A lot of kids who know it and are right up there and are right into it. All right, and I really appreciate your call. Let's bring in another voice here. Jonathan Mahler's with us in New York right now from Portland, Oregon. Rob Nyer joins us, national baseball editor for the online baseball journal SB Nation, Sports Blog Nation. Rob Nyer, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here, Tom.
Jonathan Mahler loves baseball himself. He's just wondering if it syncs up with the culture, with the vibe of this century, raising some questions about it. You're not buying it.
Well, I'm not. And I think for every point that Jonathan makes, and you know, he wrote a great essay, you could make at least as many points to argue that baseball is healthier and as relevant as it's ever been. And you know, a few minutes ago, you mentioned this conversation, and you wondered if we've been having it for a while. Let me read you a quote I found just a few minutes ago.
Sure.
Baseball doesn't match the turbulence of the modern-day society. The modern leadership must realize that the inherent appeal of professional football lies in the characteristics of swiftness and violence. The inherent appeal of motor racing, which draws so many millions of people in the country every year, lies in swiftness and violence. The inherent appeal of basketball at both the college and professional level lies to a lesser degree in its swiftness and to a very considerable degree, especially under the basket, its violence. I don't do impressions.
Yeah.
I would have done Howard Cosell if I could have. He wrote that 45 years ago.
And we knew it wasn't yesterday because we don't use the word swiftness.
Swiftness, yes.
But Howard Cosell might use it if he were still around.
Swiftness does not suggest swiftness.
I can tell you, I have a giant stack of magazines filled with articles from the 1960s arguing this exact same thing, that baseball does not appeal to the younger generation. That was 50 years ago.
Well, but what about the Little League numbers we're just hearing from the Wall Street Journal, down from 2.5 to 2 in not that many years? That's not a good trend line if you're raising up a new generation.
And the national TV ratings?
Well, I certainly think that, and I'm discouraged by the participation for kids in baseball. And that's just, more kids are playing soccer, more kids are playing video games. No question about that. I don't know that it's going to have a major impact on the future of the sport, you know, as a professional endeavor. I mean, fewer kids are playing football now, too. Doesn't seem to affect the popularity of football.
Are fewer kids playing football?
I think there's no doubt about it.
There's been this whole, you know, concussion problem
of
that
course,
has some parents.
But
thinking,
I've still not
I don't know
seen,
the actual
right.
numbers.
Mm-hmm. I don't either. But you know, I've read between the concussion problem and more kids playing soccer.
I would hope so.
I would be shocked if football participation wasn't down.
Yeah, Rob, let me ask you, though, just your theory of the case. I mean, there was a time, and you have a little fun with Jonathan quoting Mark Twain here, but still, Twain wrote about the drive and push and rush and struggle and raging, tearing, booming, you know, of baseball in the 19th century. And whatever you think, I mean, even if you love baseball, I don't think people call it, you know, rush and push and struggle and rage. It doesn't have that feeling today. So how does the slower pace of baseball, the more deliberate pace, fit in your theory of the case, Rob, into 21st century life, fandom, culture?
First of all, I wish baseball in some ways were slower and quieter. I mean, when I go to the ballpark now, between every single batter, the music is so loud.
Razzle dazzle.
I agree with that. I think that's a misguided attempt to address address this issue, this
okay.
problem.
But I think one of you mentioned earlier that baseball can be a respite, and I agree with that. And Jonathan, he quoted Daniel Okrent at the top of the show.
Yeah.
I'll quote Daniel Okrent. When the shouting is done, when we finally push away from the groaning board of nonstop sports, there will again and always be baseball. And I think that's been the case for many, many decades, and I don't see that changing.
But, you know, there has been and will always be basket weaving.
Yes, but basketball weaving did not have revenues of $7.5 billion last year.
Boy, is that true. It doesn't get truer than that. I mean, what does it matter, though, to you, Rob, if NFL football is so much bigger? Is that the indicator? Is that the ultimate measure of what really matters to Americans? What's the national pastime and what's not?
Well, now we get into a metaphysical definition of relevance, and I enjoy that conversation.
Yeah.
It's certainly, you know, Mike Trout is the greatest player in the game right now, greatest player on the planet. Mm. 50 years ago, Mike Trout would have been a household name.
Exactly.
He is not today, and that pains me to some degree. But when we talk about cultural relevance, there are other things that go along with culture besides just household names. Moneyball was a big hit, the movie.
Yeah, not that long ago. Yeah.
Just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The book was a huge bestseller. The Art of Fielding was a best-selling novel just a year ago. It is still there. Does it occupy the same place that it did in 1953? Absolutely not. But it is still a huge part of our culture and has the ability, when treated well, as it was in the movie and in that book, and many others, when people look for a touchstone for America, they still go for baseball. Fever Pitch was a fun romantic comedy 10 years ago. It wasn't a football movie. They picked baseball. And they still, artists still often pick baseball when they want to represent society.
But does that drift away next? I mean, if the NFL's so much bigger, so many more people. Yeah, you got Mike Trout out there looking beautiful in Los Angeles. But if he's not famous, if it's out of sync with some hustle bustle digital vibe, does even that kind of artistic tendency to go to baseball as the symbol of all things America, does it go away, Rob?
Well, it probably lessens over the decades, because someday, 50 years from now, maybe nobody will even know who Babe Ruth was. But it's going to be and has been a very slow process. It's not going to be much worse while I'm still alive, which is basically all I care about. But it's going to be around for a long, long time. It's not going anywhere. There's just no evidence that it is.
Let me go to Carolyn in Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, Carolyn. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
I listen to your program avidly, so when I make this comment about commentators, I'm not speaking of present company.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
But I think that some of the reason that we're not seeing as much avid following of baseball games is because when I grew up, and I'm dating myself here, I'm in my 60s,
mm-hmm.
everywhere I went, including my own home, but when I was visiting and playing with friends, their grandfathers, their fathers, their uncles were sitting by the radio listening to fabulous commentary, because it was then, if you were listening to the New York Yankees or following those a team that was not in your hometown, you were having to depend on someone to actually visualize it for you.
Is that not so great lately? I mean, I hear pretty decent guys call in baseball still. You think it's not in the same league?
Well, I don't know whether it's not in the same league or if just the fact that you had to listen to it.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, there was
on the radio, you had
listening.
To immerse your mind entirely to visualize it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that I get when I'm listening to storytelling on NPR, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It gives the listener I think you're more involved because you have to focus more, and it brings a little more liveliness to it. And I think that aspect is missing. However, I will go on to say that I'm one of the avid fans of baseball. I love it. I even watch documentaries on knuckleballers.
Okay,
and,
good.
You know, because I watched it with my father. And I think people who have fond memories of growing up with baseball will always follow it.
Carolyn, you're old school in a beautiful way. Rob, how about it? Was there something made in heaven about radio and baseball? And, you know, we're visual now.
Well, again, this is one of those places where I think for every negative we can come up with, we can come up with a positive. I love baseball on radio, and whenever I get a chance, I have my little transistor radio, and I'll listen to the game on the radio instead of watch it on television. But when I was a kid, that was our only option. I had the local team on the radio and maybe a little cable TV. Now I can watch almost every single game every day on TV, or on the radio, by the way, on the internet.
Yeah.
I've actually had people. I've seen people actually say this is not a good thing, that we're overwhelmed with baseball. But how could you have too much? You have a choice. I think there's never been a better time to be a baseball fan.
Hey, we know and we've heard it in this hour, Jonathan, starting with you and right on through, that there are tons of people who love this game, and yet, Jonathan, you come to the conclusion baseball is not cool.
And I do agree I do agree that this is a great time to be a baseball fan. I mean, which I actually say right in the essay that this is that you know, Rob talked about Mike Trout. He's just one of many great young players right now. It's an incredibly exciting time, and you know, as you've pointed out, the competitive balance issue, the as Rob points out, the fact that you can watch so many games that you can, if you can't watch the game, you can watch the highlights on your phone 15 seconds later.
Yeah.
It is a great time to be a baseball fan, but, you know, that I think is a separate issue in some ways.
Watch this century, watch this game. It's an interesting kind of benchmark against, with all the history that we can measure our whole culture and country with in some way. Jonathan Mahler writes about it in the New York Times. Link to his essay at our website, onpointradio.org. Joined us today from New York. Jonathan, terrific to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And
thank
Rob,
you for having me.
You bet. Rob Nyer in Portland, Oregon, national baseball editor for SB Nation, Sports Blog Nation. Rob, keep that flag up high for baseball. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Catherine Brewer, Julie Jopp, Sam Gale Rosen, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell, with help from Abigail Collins, Austin Federa, and Emmajean Weinstein. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Katie, Katie knew what to do just to cheer up the boys she knew. She made the gang sing this song. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball.